When it comes to ranking games, I'm always right. But when it comes to other important decisions, I don't always know what to do. So I try to live by a simple rule of thumb. When I'm not sure if I should be doing something, I consider what the world would be like if everyone did it. And if things would be worse, then I know that what I'm considering doing is, in fact, selfish. One of the things that I no longer do is skip boring elections. Not presidential elections, the other ones. State, local, and special elections. Almost everybody skips these, and as a result, only old people and hyper-partisan weirdos end up deciding who makes 90% of the rules that we all have to live by. Boring elections are how we get state and municipal lawmakers. These are the offices that end up deciding crucially important things, such as who gets to vote and who has access to healthcare. Boring elections are incredibly fast and easy to vote in, and because turnout is so low, your vote will have a huge impact. You'll be doing what's best for you and everyone else by going to vote411.org and finding out when the next boring election is and where you can vote in it. That's vote411.org. Tell them Xerxes sent you.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alotta, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others, discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Who the hell is Janine?
Hello, loyal listeners, and welcome. Today we're going to be talking about Too Human, which was nominated by Zakar on Stitcher, X-A-Q-E-R, cool name, like that one. This game was developed by Silicon Knights, and it was published by Microsoft Game Studios for the Xbox 360. Earliest release date and territory is August 19th, 2008, in the United States. Who wants to talk about Too Human?
I'm Kyle.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt you were like, I mean, you're asking the question.
It's a different way of saying who's here to talk about this game.
Yeah. But you phrased it in a way that we wanted to talk about Too Human, which was kind of like a...
Who here has to talk about Too Human?
Well, there you go. I've already said who I am.
I'm Kurt Colada, Disco Alucard.
If we got the boss in here, you know it's dire.
I only ended up here because of a spreadsheet mistake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Too Human. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So let me go into a little bit of this is the anecdote that I have, a tiny little one. I bought the game for this episode of the show. It cost me about $7 to $8 Australian dollars delivered to my house. Someone was willing to get rid of it for about the cost of the postage, the copy of the game that I received had inside the case an unclaimed pre-order bonus for Too Human. That's
wow.
Yeah, that was, I opened that and I was like, yeah, that's right, that's the Too Human, all right, that's the game. So
somebody must have known, just ab initio, opening up the game is like, I'm not gonna like this. Maybe I should just keep the resale value up by including the pre-order bonus.
Yeah, because this is when they were doing this thing, right, where you had all these pre-order bonuses, and because they were one-use codes and stuff, people were like, ooh, if I use that, it will devalue the game, or, you know, later on, I can, it'll be like, yeah, it's you can only download that with this code, and now it's whatever, like a decade later, no one gives
it. Did they eventually like time lock those things, or does everybody just accept that they're going to be available sooner or later?
No, some of them, I don't believe you can download this outfit without the pre-order code. I think it's just buried in there. You cannot do it. It's not allowed. Yeah, like a handful. I think a couple of games. I think Infamous, the original Infamous, I think had like a power that you could only get with a pre-order code. It's this weird kind of thing. It's really stupid. I don't think they do it that much
anymore. Yeah, it's kind of this generation of consoles is when I stopped caring about consoles.
It's 'cause they still do the day one edition stuff, but I think it's usually stuff that you can get like buy later.
Yeah, they kind of given up on making things exclusive to, you know, like day one buyers, because they're like, because then they have to make the content, and you can still buy it like a year later sometimes. So it's not working.
If the game's popular enough, right? Like games that didn't do so well, like that stuff is just gone, I think.
And then no one cares because the game's not popular usually.
Yeah, exactly.
So Too Human, I will get into the game. Yeah, I know. So very famous for being, we'll say, a bit of a flop. It's kind of more like just disastrously mediocre, given that apparently it cost, this is allegedly, I'm being thrown a number, between $60 and $100 million, which is a big, big difference in number, but even the smallest estimate is huge.
American or Canadian, because that might have made a difference back then.
That would have, yeah.
In any event.
I'm going to say Canadian. Yeah. I'm going to say Canadian.
But it was this game cost a big pile of money to make from the company Silicon Knights. Am I correct in that they never recovered from this game? I believe they kind of.
Yeah, this was the thing that well, there was a lawsuit with the
right
Unreal,
with this game as well. Right.
With this game, and I think I don't know if the X-Men game fell under that too. It might have, but if you go by that thing, yeah, this is the game that ruined them completely.
And so it's a game that was in development from 1999. That's not a typo. It's 1999. It was announced for the PlayStation 1. And you're going to laugh because I believe it was announced alongside Eternal Darkness, which was also by Silicon Knights. Neither game would come out for the PlayStation 1. Neither game would come out that console generation. eventually, Nintendo would force Silicon Knights to release Eternal Darkness and then would sever ties with them completely, if I remember correctly.
No, they still did Twin Snakes.
They did. I'm surprised, but yeah, I always forget
about the one where Solid Snake does a backflip off of a missile.
I always forget about Twin Snakes.
It's like, other than like the stupid cutscenes it adds, like it's not a terrible version of the game.
Interestingly, stupid action cutscenes is also a major feature of Too Human, by the way. Mm. Like a major feature. The opening cutscene to Too Human.
So what is Too Human?
Well, I will explain it with the opening cutscene. Nah, not really. Basically, the game started out as some sort of future cyberpunk game about investigating the death of your murdered, like, detective buddy. That sounds like the most, like, generic-y thing around. But then, during the development, they kind of lost most of that and then reassembled it, I believe at least twice, because it came out for the Xbox 360 from the PlayStation 1. And it's a Norse mythology-themed sci-fi fantasy game with cyberpunk elements. And
I just want to say, this sounds like a concept you couldn't get wrong.
You got all these like potato men who are really strong and mad, but they've got machine guns and they also can hack cyberspace, and there's like robots that are elves and stuff. And
what you doing, bro? Hacking cyberspace.
I was, the main reason that I am even still involved in this episode was I was really excited for this game. And looking back on it, I don't really know why. It's like, I really liked Silicon Knights because I thought Legacy of Kain was cool. Eternal Darkness, I was really impressed by. And even, I liked, Twin Snakes. It had issues.
No, I mean, it was a good version of the game.
And, even when I had graduated from college, they had this cool sounding internship program. Like, hell yeah, I'd move to Canada to be involved with these guys. It sounded pretty neat, which, of course, I never heard back from, which ended up being for the best. But anyway, I was, again, super excited for this game. And I had only been to two E3s back when I was writing for another site called the Armchair Empire. And I think this was back in 2006 where they were showing off the game. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to get to see this before it came out. And then they had it on the show floor and it was just dire. Like, it was hard to judge the quality of the game itself because it just ran so badly. But I did have a, like, they had these sessions for the press. Like, you would go in and then you'd sit in a little tiny little meeting room with the developer and they'd come out and sort of give you a private demo. And I was like, I'm going to meet Dennis Dyack and I'm going to see this rad ass game. So when I got there, they had messed up my meeting. My meeting thing. And they were like, we're going to shove you into this company called BioWare. And I was like, oh, God, I have to see this shitty game, which ended up being Mass Effect.
This is a crazy story. You sound like a liar, my friend.
And I was like, Mass Effect, once I saw it, I was like, this game sounded really cool, but it also kind of ruined Mass Effect for me because the way they presented it was, it made it sound really like Star Control 2. In the way that you explored the galaxy. And of course, when the game came out, those things were so drastically cut back because they needed to focus on, you know, what they need to focus on to make the game fun, which is probably for the better, but I always end up being a little disappointed by it, because of that. But anyway, like, I eventually did get the demo of Too Human, played it once. So, like, this game is not good. I did buy it at some point because I habitually buy stuff that they're cheap enough. I didn't remember if I bought it because, you know, I just shoved things on the shelf. I had to dig through another shelf of stuff behind like 10 feet of toy, kids' toys.
It was in the sub row, the back row of, yeah.
Yeah, blocked by all my daughter's toys. And then I had my only Xbox with a functioning disk drive. It's a Japanese Xbox. And of course, I put it in tonight and it's region locked.
Why? Why? So
I still have the Blockbuster video tag on it. I paid maybe $10 for it, probably less.
It's amazing. I will
probably never play it.
Because this game, I don't know if it was released in Japan. And I can't imagine that the Japanese would pirate the regional version outside of Japan for any reason at all.
Well, like, I mean, when the disk drive for my American 360 died, I figured it wasn't a big deal because most games are region free. And then every once in a while, I would find one that was still region locked and it would just be a minor annoyance. But since this game was taken off the Xbox Live Marketplace, like, I, you know, can't play it. So I don't really
just
care,
to me, but the insanity of region locking an Xbox 360 game so it couldn't be played in Japan is like saying, hey, like, the Japanese people who bought an Xbox 360, I mean, they were importing games, I'm sure.
No, some of them were basically tricked into buying an Xbox to play the cave games?
Cave games and a couple, like, maybe like Idolmaster or a couple of those Otakuum games.
If they wanted to play other games, like, you know, like some of the...
Yeah, like, no one in Japan was going to be like, we need the license for Too Human. That's the game that we need to license and then translate into Japanese. And I cannot imagine translating this into Japanese because...
It was released in Japan. It's on Amazon Japan, and you can get used copies in collectible condition for about a yen.
Excellent. Let's do it now.
Cheaper than I paid.
We could probably buy every copy that was ever printed in Japan for, like, less than $100.
I thought Too Human was also recalled, wasn't it, due to the lawsuit we mentioned? I thought,
I don't know if it was necessarily recalled so much as, like, it happened so long after the first print came out. Like, they weren't still making it. They're not going to go through the trouble of actually recalling this game that had been out for a couple of years. They just stopped making more and said they weren't going to make more. And they took it off the digital marketplace.
That's right. They took it off the digital marketplace, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think that they would have got the any unsold copies back. You know, not secondhand, I assume, because that wouldn't make any sense. But if there were any... I swear I read that some of the copies or, like, whatever, they was taken off shelves.
I believe you. I just don't care. I'm just still laughing about, like, the alternate universe where Kurt got that internship and is now, like, homeless in Vancouver or something like that. Like,
but at least I have healthcare.
Yeah. Hey, there you go.
So,
burn.
Yeah, on the subject of cold foreboding wastelands, that's a little bit of a Too Human. It starts with a cutscene of a grim-faced cloak man fighting a robot in I Just Saw the Matrix style. And then it doesn't really have any consistent anything. Basically, you play as Baldur, which I believe is a Viking guard name person. I'm not super up to speed with them.
You may recognize this reference. It does exist in other games.
Yeah, and, you know, you got a guy who's evil, his name's Loki. If that surprises you...
You may recognize this reference.
this Heimdall, I believe Thor is in there as well. They're all there, all the names, the checklist.
All the hits, yep.
And they don't do anything related to what the mythology might be, except Loki's evil for some reason. I never really understand the context of that. But basically, it is this weird thing where you basically take space marines, as in the 40K, which I have been told by a friend, Clade, that they're now called something completely different that can be trademarked, like Hemitage Diactyles or some ridiculous name. I don't know, but anyway,
oh
so
boy,
basically,
are they going to make some money off of that one?
Like, you've got this, basically it is very 40K in kind of presentation. You know, you've got the, it feels like an Xbox 360, like, third-person-y shooter kind of thing. You've got huge environments that just look, like, enormous. Everything's in a state of partial decay, like it was, you know, built, you know, thousands of years ago, except it's untouched, except for all the stuff you break. And you fight robots in it, and sometimes it's cyberpunk, and you go to, like, brain forests to hack the environment. I'm not kidding. You go to, like, a mystical forest dimension by drinking from a well, and then you can use psychic powers there to move objects that then affect the real world or something. And your goal is to... it's not really clear what your goal is. First, you hunt a Grendel, which is called the Grendel One, and then you have to fight some guy who, like, killed someone you like, and then you do some other stuff, and then the game ends. And it's a very short game. It's only, like, 10, 12 hours long. It feels like about 150 hours, so I don't know why anyone would decry it for being too long or too short, because it's not a very fun game.
Decry it for being too human?
sorry if I sound like I'm just kind of throwing every bit of thing that I got from this game, because I played it for hours and hours, which is not good. It drains a lot of your ability to think. So when you start the game itself, you pick one of five classes, I think, and, it's a multiplayer game, because it is basically at its core, it is like a dungeon crawler, a kind of, Diablo type of game, where, you have, like, loot and all of that stuff. But, you've got, five classes, as I said, but I think, like, three of them are basically unusable without a different person to play as well, because it is multiplayer, and basically the game does not make the classes self-sustaining or self-sufficient. The only way to get health is to collect it in the environment, so about half the classes are just unusable if you don't have a healer, and you can't use the healer by themselves, because they'll just get beat by all of the monsters. And so you basically get to pick to be the generic fighting guy, or the slightly chunky of fighting guy. Anyone else, you probably lose. So I picked the generic fighting guy. Yeah. And got started on the game.
What's the story of this game? Because according to... I mean, Bob and Ear told us that that it was supposed to be the first of a trilogy, which blows my mind.
They were touting it. Like, that was part of the hype for this game, was that it was going to be... Like, it's an epic franchise. It cost millions of dollars to make. It's been in development for years and years, and it's going to be huge, and we're going to... Yeah, no, that didn't...
That was kind of a thing amongst some of those games, right? Like, there's the one game, Advent Rising, which ended up on Xbox, which was another one of those hugely hyped games when it came out. And nobody really liked it all that much, and it was obviously kind of a flop, so it just didn't go anywhere.
I really like Advent Rising, the game. I think it's actually really fun. But that game was great because Majesco had like a competition to win $1 million. You know your game's a winner when you're trying to get people to play it by offering them $1 million. So that was a hell of a contest. I don't think the winner got their $1 million, but for the record. This game didn't have a $1 million contest. Basically, if you played it, you lost. But yeah, so... The interesting thing, and probably the most notable thing about this game, other than it burnt through a lot of money and was basically video games Waterworld, I would say. Like, this really is the... I don't know, is anyone going to understand that now? The Kevin Costner movie that basically they spent all that money and it was a huge flop. It's basically the equivalent of that. Like, it's the video game equivalent of Waterworld. And like Waterworld, which has an interesting kind of premise, this one, the combat... And the mechanics are kind of novel. Instead of almost any control scheme you're familiar with, you use the right stick to actually hit enemies by pointing it towards them. So the game constantly surrounds you with between 12 to 20 enemies, and you actually have to just directionally hold the stick towards them, and your character has a range around them where they just slide along the ground and into enemies. And you can knock them up, because Devil May Cry was a game that existed at this point. And then you can jump in the air and wail on them some more. And then you've got some, like, AoE abilities, like do damage, or knock a bunch of enemies up at the same time, or shoot cannons and that sort of thing. And you've got guns, and they don't really work all that well. And then it's just that, and it really doesn't do anything more. Like, the sliding thing kind of works, and by kind of works, if you don't point your analog stick directly at an enemy who also is slide targetable, because sometimes when they're knocked over, you can't actually target them. They need the little circle to indicate that they can be attacked. If they don't have that, or you mis-aim your analog stick, your character will just stand still and then swing his sword. Like, just stand there and he won't hit anything. And it's just like, what the heck? It's this game design thing where it's supposed to be this cool, smooth, Devil May Cry, you slide around, you shoot things, you jump, you uppercut, you do all this cool stuff, and it's all kind of seamless, or Bayonetta or whatever. But with this one, half the time your character just deadlocks on the ground and just starts swinging his sword or his mace or his axe or whatever. And it's really chunky in a way that this kind of game definitely shouldn't be. Also, you'll get surrounded by exploding enemies and die instantly.
Isn't there this something where, like, you can basically die and, like, the penalty is just that you have to watch a reincarnation animation?
Yep. So, in what I can only assume is they were testing the game and realized that they made a horrible error in terms of balance and getting it to work. They went, okay, well, let's just give the player unlimited life. So, if you die, the game stops, the trumpets of the Valkyr or whatever start wailing, and then the coolest model in the game, this, like, multi-winged Valkyr type of angel character, descends from the heavens in the slowest, most frustrating fashion, unskippably lowers their hands, raises your character up, and then slowly ascends upwards into the sky. And then you respawn, and the game is immediately fighting again. It's so ridiculous, because you can actually respawn and see your own character being lifted out of the game. It's kind of extremely silly, and every time you die, you have to watch this really... It's a cool cutscene. The very first time, it's like, oh, that's nice. And every time you die, you watch it, so... It takes between, 15 and 20 seconds to watch this slow-ass respawn animation. And at least Bioshock had the courtesy of being pretty quick about bringing you back to life. And yeah, it is the same deal. You don't have to repeat anything, you don't have to redo anything. I think enemies just stay dead, so you can basically just charge through the game. But you will probably die even if you try really hard, because sometimes you will go... tens of minutes without the game dropping any health. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you'll probably run out of health before some spawns. So that was pleasant. What a game, you know. Too human. Too much, actually. I was overwhelmed. Overwhelming game. That's it. I'm done. I'm out of game.
All right, I guess we gotta rank this then.
Well, I think we don't have a choice. No, I mean, this game is almost entirely unrecommendable because ultimately it's not fun. Like, really, I don't find it enjoyable in any form. Like, what it tries to do, it very occasionally gets right, and then you can be like, ah, I see where they were going, and I like where they were trying to go, but it almost never reaches where it's trying to go, and that's such a shame. I don't necessarily think highly of certain individuals who were involved with this game, but, no developer, like, I'm not like, ah-ha-ha, you released a bad game, you suck. Like, no, I wish this game had been able to live up to its potential, because obviously, you know, $60 million later and, you know, years of development, it definitely should have had more potential to live up to, unfortunately. Also, the inventory system is a pain in the ass to navigate. It's not terrible. It gives you all the information you need, but it's just... It has that problem where these games the Xbox 360 games especially had this, you know, like you pause, and so it's got to load the pause screen, and then it loads the inventory screen, and then it loads the armor as you change to different pieces. That's a real, just like moves a little bit in slow motion. Also, the frame rate of the game sucks, graphics are nice.
Fascinating stuff. Let's
I've
rank
tried it.
It
all. I've, yeah. All right, let's, can I would like to start a little lower. I would like to start around Altered Beast, which is 304.
Okay, Altered Beast, I can remember stuff about. So, for example, that's legendary, right there.
Anyone that's played Too Human will have vivid memories of the slowly descending angel. I tell you that. That's the main takeaway from this game is...
Okay, I see God. You. I see you there, and I raise you. Welcome to your doom.
I do like the music in Altered Beast a little bit. It's pretty
Altered
good.
Altered Beast is one of the most insane games I can think of.
What I love about Altered Beast is how everyone treats it kind of mundanely, like, it's Altered Beast. But it's, like, the most insane thing, right? Like,
yeah, it's nuts. There's nothing about it that makes sense. There's not one, I mean, it's, there isn't a single good idea there except for the execution. It's like a bad idea that's been superbly executed. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, the crazy thing about it. It's like, usually it's the opposite. Usually you've got a pretty good idea that's poorly executed. Altered Beast is a terrible idea. Yeah, that is, yeah.
But at least have a good
soundtrack, because one of the reasons why I liked Silicon Knights games is there was a composer, I think his name was Steve Hennefin, and the soundtracks to a lot of the games that he did were pretty good. It looks like you can still get a soundtrack CD for it. And I'm like,
The soundtrack is pretty good. The problem with it is not really the composition's fault. It has this thing where pretty much everything that happens in the game and every time anything happens, it cranks to like this maximum, like... If I describe, like, epic Viking music, I don't know exactly what that would entail, but just imagine that kind of deal, with just a little bit more, I guess, electronics in it. That gets cranked up every time anything happens. So, you know, like, two enemies will show up, and they're, like, just arbitrary mooks who can't do anything. And then it's just like... You're like, guys, I can handle this. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah, like, the music's good, but you will get sick of it by the time you get through the game, because it's all they have, I guess, so they kind of... Between the, like, art being really nice, because it is a genuinely... I was very impressed when I loaded the game up. The frame rate collapses. It cannot handle about three-quarters of what it does. It's kind of a Shadow of the Colossus situation. But you can tell, you can see, like, there's some really nice visuals in this game, and if I had have played this game a bit more heavily when it came out, I played the demo and went, nope. No way, and I made the right choice. And that's why they don't make demos anymore.
We spent way too much time and money making this game to let people actually try it before they buy it.
That is
stupid. I get it. So right now, I just want to let you know, I'm playing Cyborg Justice while I'm waiting for you guys to settle on a ranking. That's going to be our bonus game for this week, I believe, right?
Yeah, it will
or maybe probably next week. Probably next week, because we're kind of behind on the bonus games. But
doesn't matter.
I don't like Cyborg Justice, but I liked it more than I liked Too Human.
I'm not surprised. Too Human,
Okay, so what about putting it below Neverending Nightmares at least, right? That's
at
number 321.
I mean, this game's going to gradually tank itself because there's very little reason to play this game other than to just kind of nod sagely and be like, I see how badly you can ruin a game. Yes, I can follow
this. I just feel bad because, you know, all the money they spent on it, you know, there's so many people who must have worked on this. And you know they didn't want to make a game like this. Like, you know that they wanted it to be good. That's why I feel bad. Like, at a certain point, I think one of the reasons why games, like, rarely get truly terrible rankings these days is just because it's so painful an experience to make something anymore. Things are just such big productions that...
We don't
have to worry about that because it's long after any of these people we can't hurt their feelings. So, like, go nuts.
Yeah, I mean, like, Too Human is, like, an easy target, definitely. And that's why, you know, I bought the game and I really jammed myself in there to really get into the Too Human.
Better or worse than Alone in the Dark 2008?
This is almost a, almost, not quite, but, you know, like, it's kind of like Alone in the Dark 2008. Is a train wreck, but it's also like a train wreck where you're like, it's full of like, it's brimming with interesting ideas, and it's just absolutely abysmal. Whereas this one is kind of like, it has like a cool concept, like, you know, like the stories, not the story, but the actual like world is a fun kind of cool world. The writing is pretty trashy, and the attempt at dramatic like cinematography is laughable. There's this one bit which I was laughing for a while because it's like got an establishing shot of like trucks and tanks and stuff like driving through like the frosty like ice wilderness, and it holds this like slow freaking like shot for like 10-15 seconds, and I'm like, yes, I know, I get it. And then it just cuts to a different shot of the same thing. I'm like, what the hell? Get to the anything else. And it's like, someone wanted to be a director in this for sure. But the difference is, this game, it's not like, it's offensively mediocre. You can play it and it will only be mildly frustrating. Whereas Alone in the Dark 2008, you're almost definitely going to shine your torch into that stupid ass, like, mud shadow goo that eats you alive instantly. And you'll be aiming your flashlight right at it. And then it'll just be like, and kill you. And you just be like, the hell? And it'll do that like over and over again. And basically what I'm saying is I was less angry playing this game than Alone in the Dark 2008.
Okay, so I'm looking at some other games here. We've got Gekibo Gekisha Boy, Survival Arts, Top Gear Rally, No One Can Stop Mr. Domino, Attack of the Mutant Camels, Fantasy World Dizzy. This is in the low 300s.
That is. Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess.
I think it's got to go below that stuff.
Like, yeah, like, you know, I bring up No One Can Stop Mr. Domino a lot because it's
well,
such
no
an
one
adorable
can stop
game.
Him for one thing.
Right?
Yeah, it's hard. Hard not to bring him up. He just keeps
right.
coming.
And he's great. His game is great in the sense that I love the idea behind it. I hate playing it. It's just nobody likes playing it, really. But I like the idea of that more than this game sort of. Okay. This game fumbled like a game that should have been an ease. This is like a penalty shootout where the other team's goalie is dead and they somehow missed it.
Like, they somehow like kick the ball right into the corpse. Just poof, like hits the corpse right in the chest, and you're like,
and then
I couldn't have done that worse.
That and hits them in the face. You know, like they kick it like, okay. Oh god, my face.
Can you say that one more time? Exactly the same way.
Oh, maybe. Oh god, my face. Nah,
excellent.
Not quite.
That's it's close enough. All right, so what if we put it?
Yeah, I mean,
above Eight Eyes. Eight Eyes is a competent game.
Like, I'll tell you what. Like, we all dislike the Yoshi game. Was that like Yoshi's Cookie? Is that
What if we put it below Last Battle? Because at least Last Battle has like head explosions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, ooh,
got a pretty rad soundtrack too.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I mean, that's where it goes. I think it's where it goes.
Yeah, I can go above Zardion because I do think that Zardion is a good mate for this one because Zardion is almost the exact same. It's like, it's cool, it's got living planets and robots and it's space battle and it's just not good. And
yeah, it should be great. Yeah, but it's not. Okay, so that's where it goes. Too Human, which we should have been called T.O. Human 2. Too Human? With the T.O.O. Yeah, it doesn't really work that well when you describe it. But anyway, that's where it goes. Below Last Battle, above Zardion, which would put it at number 337. We are so very, very sorry, but thank you for listening. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.